The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Any of these are found to be in me, I'm not fit to be a leader. Okay, if I'm after money or power or prestige or whatever it may be, then I'm just not fit to be there. But let me emphasize again that in the Christian circles, where people who are functioning under the lordship of Jesus Christ, we have a similar system. But what we don't do is we don't fight our way to the top. If God desires to put me there, then He'll do that. If God desires for you to be the principal of this school, He'll arrange that. You don't have to make your way there. He'll see to it that that happens. If God desires for you to be the board chairman, He'll take care of that. He'll arrange it in His own way. You don't have to force your way up there. And whatever you do, not whatever you do, but what really frustrates me is when Christian people will begin to move their way up through a system like this and care little about the people around them. All right, I would like to now go from this general idea to a more specific example of what you might find in a school flowchart. Brother Ed referenced Happy Valley Christian School, and I referenced Sleepy Hollow Christian School. You can visit both of them to see how they actually function if you choose. Sleepy Hollow Christian School here shows an example of a flowchart. A couple of things here I want you to know. Now, by the way, there's some problems with this thing, and I know it. I just chart it for you to look at. And I suggest in your schools, if you don't have some kind of flow chart to show how things work, especially if it's in a fairly large school, you ought to have one. Here we show the board at the top where the seat of authority lies, and we have a chairman of the board. Notice that he's not above the board, he's just a servant to it, and a secretary. There may be other members. Now, I call this next person a headmaster. I do that for a reason. If you call this person a principal, it might mean something a little bit different to what it means to be a headmaster. I was reading a little bit in town the other day about, at the Allegheny College, about some of the current trends in education. And I was surprised to find that even in secular schools today, they're starting to think that it would be better to have a smaller school with a principal who is also a teacher. This person is called a headmaster. Okay? Not a principal. This person's job description is going to be a little bit different. In fact, in my home community, in the elementary school that I graduated from, which I went through, has reorganized, and this is the way they have. They have a headmaster. They don't have a principal. And that person's description is a little bit different. This is not a person who sits in an office somewhere and scribbles down directions and does this and does that and does the other thing, but never really sets foot in the classroom and deals with the unruly student. The principal doesn't do that, at least not in your secular schools, but a headmaster does. Okay, in elementary school, he may be teaching fifth or sixth grade. And his job is to teach those students just like any sixth grade teacher would. He's also there to help the rest of the teachers who may find themselves in difficulty, in trouble, hither or yon. Okay? And I bring that out to emphasize to you, if there are board members here or people who are responsible for for seeking out leadership and putting them in place, don't underestimate the importance of describing what this job is. Now, I have trouble with this. I'm not a person who does well at this. And Brother Milo can tell you that there are job descriptions that we're still fiddling around with, trying to figure out what it really is that the person is responsible to do. But the clearer you can get that, the better off you are in your leadership structure. Okay? And I'm telling you, you can find the best of men and the best of ladies, but if you do not have a good leadership structure, you shot yourself in the foot right to begin with. They have to know what they're supposed to do, or they're going to be in trouble when they set out to accomplish the task that you thought they should do, because they won't know. Okay? And if you happen to be on the other end of the stick and you still don't know what your job is, I suggest that you go talk to your school board and ask them, what am I supposed to do? What is my job? What is my responsibility? So, we have a headmaster, he has a secretary in this particular case. We have teachers here in this flowchart. And the teacher of first and second grade, now the reason I subdivided it like this is because some third and fourth grade teachers may have to know that the first and second grade teacher is not their responsibility. You know that? Now and then they have to know that. You'll find some teachers who are teaching first and second or fifth and sixth, and just because they've been there 10 years, they think it has become their responsibility to instruct the first and second grade teacher, take them under the wing and show them how it's done. Now, done properly, there's nothing wrong with that. You understand that. That means somebody who has something to say ought to be given the opportunity to say something. But this could create a problem if they think it's their responsibility to make first and second tick. All right, so they may have to see something like this. You might notice also, well, let me ask you a question. Don't raise your hand on this, just think about it. How many of you have been in a situation before where another teacher disciplined one of your children, a student in your classroom, or somebody at least that you were responsible for, and you felt just a little funny about it? Don't raise your hand. Or you even maybe wondered if you would have done the same thing if you had been in that person's shoes. Well, sometimes this is necessary, but fifth and sixth grade students are not the responsibility of third and fourth grade teacher, you see, in this chart. Now, it could be that we all go out to recess and it's understood that if I'm the first and second grade teacher and one through six is out on the playground, they're my baby when they're out there. Okay? But we just have to, that has to be clear. I have seen a few disputes come up because somebody thought this was their responsibility when it wasn't. Now, there are a few things missing here. I want you to tell me some critical people that you don't even see on this flowchart that you better think about. Parents, right to begin with, where would you put them in this thing? At the top, all right? Anybody disagree with that? Never be afraid to disagree in my class. As long as it's done with respect, in honor, you have the freedom to say what you want to say in my classes. What do you think? Want to put them at the top? That gives them a terrific amount of power, don't it? Doesn't it? So the parents... Okay, I'll let it go, Dad.
Well, not each individual parent has authority of the school board that's collecting the parents.
All right. Anthony wants to enlarge the group and say, well, let's talk about the collective group of parents. Good point. I don't have it written up here, but you can write it in. The community of believers. Now, I'll tell you why I said that. Because you have to put the pastor somewhere, too. Did you ever get into a situation where there was some conflict? It's a few I didn't put anywhere. There's some conflict between what the board has decided and what the church leadership decided or thought about a particular issue. That's not uncommon among in our Christian circles at all, Mennonite circles. It's often the case. Well, where would you put them? Well, the only way I know to resolve that, to let the board have the authority that they ought to have in order to run the school, so on, is to just draw a big circle clear at the top, it's off the page there now, that is the community. I mean, obviously the board derives its authority from the patrons, from the church, from the organization that has formed them. That's obvious. But it is true that you have no obligation to let one parent run the school. In fact, that's way off track. you don't want to just put John Smith there at the very top and say, well, when the chips are down, he's got authority. He just tells the board what to do. You're not going to do that. Well, where would you put the janitor? You have your choice. There are a couple places. You might assign a teacher who's responsible for cleaning. Yeah, if you have a janitor. Where would you put the van drivers, accounting, pastor? All these people need to fit into these categories somewhere. And I don't think I should go into a great more detail, but I'm just pointing out to you there has to be a leadership structure in place. Go back to your school boards if they don't have something like this for you to look at and ask them to give it to you. Now, in a small school, don't misunderstand me, you probably don't even need something like this, but the larger the school and the more complex the organization, the more it is important to make sure these categories are where they belong. Let's just stop there for a moment and field some questions. Do you have any particular questions that you would like to raise in relationship to these points? Ed.
When is it or is it okay for a teacher to bypass the headmaster's responsibility?
Good question. The question is, when is it or is it ever? All right, for the 7th and 8th grade teacher to bypass the headmaster and talk to the board about a given issue. Does somebody care to answer that question? It can be an opinion. Give your opinion. Yes?
I would say the teacher is important to get asked about whatever the issue is, has the interaction proof and support, or totally against whatever it is, then the teacher has responsibility to go to the board.
Okay. Thank you. His comment was that if a teacher goes to a headmaster with a problem and the headmaster ignores it or does not field the question, then he has a responsibility to go to the board about the problem. Okay, somebody else have a little input here. Don't raise, yes. Okay, and what did you say we ought to do about it? If what happens? Oh, okay, so the problem is with the headmaster, you're saying. Okay, yeah, possibility? Anybody else have some input here? According to the Sermon on the Mount, you go to the headmaster first. Good. I like that. All right. This is what I have to say about this subject. Sure, it's appropriate to go to the the board directly, but I would never do it if I was a teacher unless I first told the headmaster that's exactly what I was going to do. You understand? I really think this is important. Do you mind if I talk to the board chairman about this problem? And if he doesn't think it's important, I'll drop it. And if he's any kind of a decent headmaster, he's going to say, that's all right. I'll tell you right now what it does to that man if you decide to go straight to the board and never tell him that that's what you're going to do. He's almost always going to say, if I knew it was that bad, I'd have done something. Okay? So I would suggest to you that you refuse to bypass this person unless you tell them. Okay, I have done everything I know how to do. I really appreciate your input. Do you mind if I spoke, if I would speak to the board chairman? Yes.
How about if the board is willing to have business or whatever, and you haven't had time to talk to the headmaster, or, you know, talk to another teacher or something, and you ask how it's doing, you then tell the board or say, the waiter might talk to you?
Okay, supposing the board puts you on the spot is the question. They ask you. They come into your room, and the board chairman says, we've heard some whispers about some difficulty in room 205. Is there anything you can help us with? What should you do? You tell me. Headmaster knows nothing about this. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Okay. If at
chairman out of his place.
Aha! Is the chairman out of his place? Is the question. I would say it could be. Maybe not, but could be. More input.
Would it be sufficient to say that the person I'm responsible to has not heard or beyond this? So, and just clarify that our response is not registered by you?
A good question deserves a good question. So you're asked about so-and-so and such a room. You might ask the board chairman, have you talked to the headmaster about this? And if the board chairman says no, then you would just say, well, I would feel more comfortable if you first ask him what he thinks. And if he feels like I have something good to say about it, you come my way. I'd be happy to share it with you. But probably you should talk to him first. Okay, is it right for the board to talk to the other teachers about the headmaster? Somebody want to answer that question? Now, you realize when you state a question like that, that scenarios come not a dime a dozen, but there are hundreds of them. Yes?
I think there's a difference between a board member coming to school specifically to find something out, just being there, or being, I don't know where it's happened, over a soccer case. They're all around the soccer table, some subject comes up, the board member finds something out, it's a teacher, they come out of the student. It's a little difficult for a teacher in a social setting to say, well, I can't talk about that. Is that all right to say that?
Sure is. I'd like to just add to that something. If you're a headmaster, if you're a principal in the school, I have made it very clear to my fellow men here at this school, if you have something to say to the board, you just say it to them. I've given them a blanket statement. Just go ahead. So see, you might I mean, for myself, if I'm doing something that is out of the ordinary and it's not defendable, I would just as well know about it. Okay? So now I'm speaking a little bit to the principals right now and saying to you, you ought to provide the kind of atmosphere in which a school teacher would not be frightened to go to a board chairman and say, you know, there's a little bit of a problem somewhere, and it seems as though Melvin is a little unaware of this, and I really hate to talk to him about it, but I was wondering if you would. I want them to have the perfect comfort to do that. It strikes me that headmasters who are more protective of all of this are insecure in themselves about something. And they're really frightened to be exposed or whatever. So if you're in those shoes, you could think about that a bit. Okay. Is it all right to bypass the school board chairman and talk to another board member? Yeah. Matthew 18 is always in place. I think you know that. And that is where there's a problem with people, you do your best to deal with that person. And if you don't feel like that can be done, well, I still would say, Todd, I still insist, in my own personal life, when I work this out, I don't mind bypassing somebody if that person knows that I'm doing it. And I don't mind telling them. I mean, why should I? If I'm just going to say to them, you know, I really am concerned about this, and I'd like to talk to so-and-so about it. Is that okay with you? Ed.
Would you admit, though, that in reality that is not acceptable headmaster?
We're talking about... I will admit that. We're talking about developing leadership. That's what we want. Yes, I agree. It sure is. And see, here we go back. We back up to our description of the headmaster, and a school board is going out to hire somebody to be in charge, to be the principal. Well, you want to find somebody. Now, we'll talk about these characteristics in the next session. But you want to find somebody who's got what it takes to take the flak, not only take the flak, but is secure enough to say, well, I can't answer your question. I'm not sure I agree with you, but I welcome you to talk to the school board and see what they think about it. In fact, I'll bring it up at the next board meeting, even though I disagree. And we'll see what they've got to say. If you can find you a person like that, hire them. So you want, yes. Good. Good. Mm-hmm. Very good. The attitude that should always be existent in a situation like this is, how can I make the person whom I'm responsible to successful? Now you think about that. The way to make all of this work right is, if this person says, I'm responsible to the headmaster, how can I make him successful? Now, I'll tell you why. That's even almost selfish to say that. If you make him successful, you automatically be successful. Okay. When schools, you probably all know of outstanding principals in various schools, somewhere here or there. And there's a really outstanding leader. And if you teach in that school, and then you move somewhere else, and you're looking for a job, and you say, well, I taught at such and such a school, and everybody knows that the principal, they know the principal, but they didn't know the teacher. And he did very well. They automatically assumed you had to be doing something right. Okay, so you make him successful, you become successful. Okay. I think we should take a break. It's just about 2:30. I'll give you 5 minutes to stretch yourself, get a drink. 10 minutes. Go to the lavatory. Return.
Thanks, Father, for your goodness to us. Again, as we have been given the privilege to enter into the work of your kingdom as teachers, we just pray that you would help us inspire others to enter into this task for your glory and cause. Help this afternoon as we consider further the meaning of responsibility, training and teaching people to take up these positions, to give us wisdom. In Jesus' name, amen.
Have an announcement or so here to make just before we get started. We need to have a count on how many will be here for lunch tomorrow. Could I see your hands? Yes, as soon as I find what I'm looking for.
It's an overhead that we looked at before, and we were talking here about the leadership structure. We spent actually our whole last session here. People who know me know that this last session that I've just been done sharing with you is something that is not of high interest to me. I teach school from the hip. I administrate from the hip. I do almost everything from the hip. It's a bad way to do it. It's kind of like if it's time to do it, do it. When you figure out what you got to do, well, get off of your lazy behind and do it. But the older I get and the more I enter into some of this, the more I realize the importance of it. So I don't want what I just got saying to negate that. I'm just telling you that you can put all the structure in place that you want to. And if what we want to talk about next is not there, it's worthless. If you don't have personnel, you don't have leaders, if you don't have people who will fit these slots, you can't find them. You've got a problem. Okay. The structure is not, well, might help, but it's not going to solve your problems. Okay. Here is where I see the leader at, and this is the thing that makes my heart begin to beat a little faster. Because I know full well if you can just find the right people to fill some of these places, things work a lot better. Now, when it comes to leadership development, you have a couple of options. So one of the brothers back here was just sharing with me that they're starting a new school. Well, one of the options is to find people who have the characteristics and the qualities required to fill these positions. I don't mind telling you this. They are few and far between. They are few and far between. We get calls here all the time from people, schools that need personnel for this or that, or the other thing. Schools that are having difficulty. They're just hard to find. You're lucky if you can find one. Your second option is make one. Now you've got a big job. I mean, a big job. So you're going to, the title of this discussion is Developing Leadership for Our Schools. This is a big, big task. A lot bigger than I can even begin to describe to you. So you have a good principal at a school somewhere, and he's getting older, and he's going to soon be moving on. You need somebody to replace him. Has your school thought enough about the future to be thinking about developing leaders now who will be able to do this job? Well, I have a few categories here that we would like to talk about. Just a few excerpts to begin with on this issue.
for the leader. Character plus qualification earns position. Never, never, never the other way around. Okay? Where people think that if one just has a position, then he will somehow absorb the character and the qualifications. The discussion this afternoon is not on church leadership. If it was, I would have a few things to say about that. I'll just make one statement about it. Ordination in itself has never equipped a person for the task. It maybe put him in the position, but it didn't equip him. Character plus qualification earns the position. Okay? So what we are talking about when we are talking about developing leadership is we're going to talk about their qualifications, the kind of character that they ought to have. And again, sisters here, remember, the little youngster who is in your first grade class, he's 7 years old, he's 6 years old, he has those big eyes and smiling face and all of that, you can contribute to producing the kind of leaders that we need. Now, I'll say this ahead of time, that this whole issue is so intricate that I don't even begin. I won't even begin to try to tell you that I know how to do this. In fact, I've lived now long enough to see a few of my students grow up and take positions at various places. And if you had asked me when they were in fifth grade if they would be capable of doing this, I would have said no. I don't see how they'd ever do that. They don't have what it takes. And somehow events shape up and things happen and they're experiencing it. By the time they're 25 years old, they have gained some of these qualities in some way, shape, or form that fits them for the task. So again, I don't have any particular formula here for it. I just want to talk about some of the characteristics that we're after. So the point here is, the problem of getting a person from here over into this position, and one of those positions, and be prepared for it, is a big job. And let's talk about some of the characteristics that we're after. I have listed eight of them here that I consider to be essential in the leader. Let me look at this second statement first. There is a difference between managing a school and leading a school. This is true in any position of leadership. Chrysler Corporation, before Lee Iacocca came along, was in trouble, serious trouble. Now listen carefully. They had managers who could manage good enough. There was no problem with that. Their problem was they didn't have a leader. They didn't have a person who had an eye for the future, who had an eye for what the car should look like. Some of you probably have read the story. Okay? And I'm just pointing out to you here the really outstanding people in the schools, in the churches, in your community are people who have leadership skills as well as management skills, and maybe even beyond management skills. Because if you're managing, you're just holding your own. If you're leading, you see something that puts a sparkle in your eyes, that puts maybe even a faraway look in your eyes, that puts strength in your steps, that carries you through the crisis, because you see something that nobody else sees. There's a picture, a vision, firmly implanted in your mind, and you are determined to carry this school that direction. Now, I mention his name since he was here, Brother John D. Martin. Now, I don't say this to toot his horn, I just say it for a fact. Brother John came into our community, we didn't have a high school. People didn't finish school. teaching in our community was, to be a teacher was derogatory. It was, well, you did it if you couldn't do anything else. And I was just a young man at the time when Brother John came into our community, 18 years old. And after he was there for a couple of years, the school board convinced him to teach in the school. And he agreed to do that on a couple of conditions. Those conditions were met, so he entered the school. The boys in that school would not sing when he began to teach. The older boy sat there with her mouth totally shut. Now, I can assure you of one thing. By the end of that first year, their mouths were not shut. They were open. And his second year there, I began to teach with him and was really blessed in that. He did not do this single-handedly, but was by far the most important person over a period of 5 to 10 years to totally change the perspective in our community. He saw something in his eyes, in his mind, that nobody else saw. He saw potential leaders. I don't view myself as being one of those, but I just will mention my story. He was the person who collared me and said, "I see in you the potential to teach school, and I just think that that's what you ought to do." My initial response was, "You're crazy." My final response was, "Okay, we'll see." And through the vision that was in his mind, today it is an honor to teach at Anchor Christian School. Today it still isn't where it should be, but people think a lot more about finishing school and preparing themselves for what needs to be done. Okay? That's what I mean by leadership. Okay? And there's a difference between that and managing. Now, don't misunderstand me. The good manager is a good man. And you need them. People who know how to keep things going and know how to get schedules together and all that kind of stuff. All needed. But you need more than that, or we're after more than that. We're after leaders. I don't mind telling you that at our home congregation, when I was teaching there at the school, I made it very clear that it was expressly my intention to inspire the young men in our community to enter into full-time service for God. It was not my intention to make them good farmers. It was fine with me if they became that and the Lord led them into that. That was great. But I wanted everybody to know that I wanted to see these young men become teachers and preachers and missionaries, as well as farmers and technicians and mechanics and the other things that are there. Okay, we want a sense of leadership. What are the qualities that have got to be in place for this to be the case? Now, here's where I'm going to have a little problem, because I can tell you, I think, at least they communicate to you somewhat what the qualities are that a leader needs to have. What I'm going to be a little shorthanded on here is telling you how to get this quality to emerge in a person. Okay? And I'm not so sure that this is not God's secret alone. I'm just not sure that I can, that we're ever going to know how to do this. Who can tell why it is that the young man who was 18 years old yesterday, lethargic, lazy, didn't care, just loafed around, the next day something happens in his heart? We sometimes call it being born again or becoming a new man. And you meet him a week later and you see that you say, something happened to that guy. I don't know what it was, but something happened. He's a different man. And there wasn't a soul in the face of the earth who could have effected that change. Okay? I'm admitting that up front. Okay, just telling you that we had better be on our knees, perhaps first and foremost, praying that God would raise up the men who have these qualities to carry out these tasks. In fact, maybe the most important piece of advice I could give you this afternoon, is to get on your knees and pray daily for Harry and Ben and Sally and Jill and whoever it may be, that God, in fact, would bring to pass in their lives today the events that would bend them in the right direction and would give them a vision for the future and everything that is involved. So I want to be sure to have said that. I have some things down here. I don't know how to do them. God does. Do you know how to speak to God? If you know how to do that, get in contact with Him about your students. You know His address, I suspect. Get in contact with Him, and He'll tell you, or He'll effect this change that you can't. Well, let's just look at these eight things. Maybe I'll back up and make one more statement yet. I might not be able to tell you how to do it. I can tell you a few things that will block these things happening that you better not do. Okay? Number one, the leader exhibits vision. Now, I know a few things about what needs to happen here. I just reflect in my own life. How many of you have ever read a book? So you were reading Through Gates of Splendor, or Shadow of the Almighty, or something like that. And you read through that book, and you get to the end of the thing, and your heart, there's tears in your eyes, and your heart is just bumping a little bit, and you're saying, God, help me to be like that. Give your students some good books. I mean the little guys. The little fellows in your classroom, read some to them. And give them some good books. They've got to enlarge and broaden their horizons beyond their immediate vicinity. And believe me, there are too many families who don't see to this. Okay? And as a result, here they are just kind of meandering along. Give them some good books. I'm not going to mention a lot of names, but I can just remember several books, having read them and moving me mightily as a young man to say, that's the way I'm going to be. I want to be like that, and I want to do that. That is beginning to plant vision in that young man's mind. He sees beyond himself. Take them places. Talk about people who are important. Don't be so excited about Michael Jordan. I mean, it's serious. Great basketball player, have no doubt about that. But the people that you tend to emulate affects the vision that your students have. It makes a difference. Maybe just a little bit, but it makes a difference. Remember, my thesis here is a leader is produced by a whole baggage of things that affect him in the direction he's going. So that day when you get up to read that missionary story or some other story of courage and grace and all of that, that just nudges that little youngster a little bit more in the direction of expanding his world and seeing something that a person who never heard that story doesn't see. Okay? You want to take advantage of that. This person needs to have vision. And we could cite examples of people where this was the case. I love these people when I bump into them. I really do. They're all excited about something that seems almost impossible, but it is so firmly implanted in their mind, it's as good as happened. It's just a matter of getting on with it and getting it done. Okay? So this person exhibits vision. Secondly, the person must have ability to inspire. And here again, yes. Good point. I would be bold enough to expand it beyond strictly Christian literature. Acts of courage on the parts of people down through the ages have always served as a sounding board for rising generations as to what courage really is. And so, sure, there are places for books. When you read a good book, I read War and Peace, I remember, long story. And at the end of that book, was quite convinced that to engage in warfare was certainly the wrong thing to do. That was written by Leo Tolstoy. A very powerful statement about war. Or let's see, Les Miserables. You ever read that book? If you haven't, you ought to. Very powerful, moving book that stirs you in some of the noblest themes of human experience. We ought to be familiar with them and we ought to be able to recommend them. Thanks, Ed, for just encouraging me to say a little bit more about that. Good. Yes. Les Miserables. That's a French, The Miserable Ones. That's a French title, that stirs you in some of the noblest themes of human experience. We ought to be familiar with them and we ought to be able to recommend them. Thanks, Ed, for just encouraging me to say a little bit more about that. Good. Yes. Les Miserables. That's a French, The Miserable Ones. That's a French title. Victor Hugo is the author. Now, you want to cut out a good bit of time for the story. It's a long book. Okay? When you read a good book, share it with somebody else. Tell them about it. Expand their vision. That's what you want. All right. The ability to inspire. Now, I realize that right now I've just told you that there's something you ought to do. You ought to read stories to your children. You ought to read them yourselves. You ought to pass books around. The next question is, do I have the skill to inspire you enough to actually do it? I'm not going to attempt right now. But that's the next thing you need. Even as a teacher in front of the children, you've got to be able to somehow raise the level of inspiration. Be inspiring. You can't copy this. You can't mimic it. I can't tell you what all of the characteristics are, but I just know one thing. There are some people, when you get done listening to them, you say, wow, that was a breath of fresh air. I'm ready to go for it. And the next person can say the same thing with almost exactly the same words, and it lacks inspiration. It lacks drive. It lacks energy. Now, I wish I knew how you change this in somebody. I suspect it might grow out of vision. I don't know. But the ability to inspire. Thirdly, a sense of communication. Some of these, you know, I just feel like, well, what should you say about them? They're so obvious, they're so true, but they're so neglected. You need a sense of communication. Just a story here. Talked to a gentleman one time who came through public schools, one of the best public schools in the nation, according to the statistics. And so I asked him, I said, well, what do you attribute to the as being the success of this school? Why did it do so well? And he thought for a minute, he said, well, I don't know. All right, I'll just give you this little example.
I think he was in 10th grade. We walked into class, sat down, and the teacher said, all right, we're not having any written assignments this year. However, I'm going to assign sections to read, and the questions are at the end. And the next day when you come in, I'm going to quiz you on those questions. All right, fine. Sound like a breeze. They come in the next day, and the teacher said, Ronald, come to the front of the room. So Ronald goes to the front of the room, stand up straight, tall, son. So he stands up straight and tall. Teacher goes to the back of the room, and she asks him all four questions. And he said, I stood up there and went. He had no sense of communication. Teacher walked up, happened to be a map right there. Grabbed a hold of that map, pulled it right down in front of him. Went back, said, first question. Asked him the question again. Made it very clear to him that he was not going to sit down until he communicated something to that group of students about what he knew about that question. And it was going to be done verbally and in front of them. He said, does that answer your question? I said, it sure helps. I understand. Have you ever taught speech? I have. What do you do with a student who is so shy and so backward and so unsure of themselves that they almost cannot bring themselves to go to the front and talk to people, to their own classmates? Now, this obviously is not the only form of communication, but I'm just using it as an example. I'd say 50% of my students are that way. But if you're willing to go to the bother of thinking through this point, these students, if they're going to be leaders in their generation, have got to develop a sense of communication and then lay out a strategy to accomplish that. That's all that those teachers were doing in that public school. They just knew very well that if you could get a person to go to the front of the classroom, ask them a question that they were supposed to know the answer to, and have them communicate that to a group of people publicly, you were on the road to sending them in the direction of leadership. Because that is something a leader has got to be able to do. He's got to be able to communicate. Furthermore, he's got to be able to communicate on one-on-one situations. The teacher has got to provide forums for this to actually take place. And I would add to it that by the pen, he must learn to communicate. So when you're teaching grammar, you're teaching English, remember something. The better that person can accomplish that task, the more fit a leader he is. Character plus qualification earns the position. Okay? And I have seen this. While John Calvin, okay, I don't want to exalt him as a leader, but he certainly emerged on the world scene as an important person. I was surprised to read that one of his greatest strengths was letter writing. He wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote to people all over Europe on significant issues, personal letters, arguing points of theology, and they would argue back. And he could write well. And everybody knows who's a church historian that the institutes of the Christian religion are by most reformers considered to be the most significant book written during the Reformation. Altered many, many people's thinking. That was the pen of John Calvin. The communicating pen. Not the speech. Not the one-on-one. It was the pen. See? So when I say a sense of communication, your leader knows how to do it on paper. As well as with his voice. He sure does. And you want to train the upcoming generation how to do that. Even in the day of computers, it is still proven that there is something about taking a pen in hand, a paper in hand, and the interaction between hand and brain and all of that, and getting it on a piece of paper that can hardly be substituted. Okay? Teach them to do that. good writers.
We need them. It's a part of being able to lead.
Fourth, able to persuade. This is even back in the book of Titus, I believe, where it says that you have the ability to persuade the gainsayers. Okay, these are leaders, qualifications that are given to them. And I've often thought about this. If you're a very persuasive person, what will happen? You'll get blamed for being a salesman, having a smooth tongue, being able to do this or do that. Well, I don't think it has to be that way. I don't think it even has to be associated with a smooth tongue. But the leader has got to be able to persuade. I think about our church communities, and I see this over and over again. My heart goes out to the leaders who are attempting to lead a group of people and lack the skill of drawing a consensus out of that group of people by persuading them that this is the direction we should walk in. Rather, what I see is a lot of congregations with a lot of people who have a lot of good ideas and almost nobody there with this persuasive skill to lead that congregation, those many ideas and those many thoughts, in a right path. It's called shepherding in the Bible. And we really need this. Again, you're noticing, I can't tell you all of the characteristics and qualities one needs to be persuasive. Maybe you could go ask Dale Carnegie or somebody like that. They might know. But they must be able to persuade. Number five, courage to decide.
I remember persuasion.
Yes. Yes.
He would use everything from Donald Duck to Jesus Christ to convince people of his point of view.
Listen to that.
And so you need a vocabulary.
You need a vocabulary, and that has been emphasized before. Do you hear Ed just adding a nuance there that, I mean, we could go on with things that are required to get this done, but vocabulary. Sure. Teach that youngster vocabulary. Good words. Fitly spoken, just say it the right way and move people. Okay? Thank you. Courage to decide. And I say, I added courage in there rather than just saying being decisive. Why? Well, guarantee if you are called upon to lead a group of people in any way, I don't care how small or how large, there'll be varying opinions in that group of people. And if it's your responsibility ultimately to lead that group, you've got to have the ability to be decisive, to decide, and you've got to have the courage to make the decision with all the risk that may be involved, be ready to defend it, be ready to carry through, and maybe ultimately even be ready to change your mind if you have to. If it's shown that something is not quite the way it should be. This one is so important. We tend to have raised a lot of people who are fairly indecisive. I was reading Alan Bloom's book on, what's the title of it? Closing of the American Mind. Okay. And Alan Bloom says in that book that the problem with the university student today is they come into school and they have no opinions. They have been trained not to have any. So if you ask them, if you are walking down the street on this side and on the other side of the street you saw a husband beating his wife, what would you do? Their answer, he says, is almost invariably, there's no way you could know what to do. It depends. It this, it that, it the other thing. It bothers Alan Bloom that people have come to life now with no opinion. I notice this just kind of infiltrating our circles. Okay, we have to be able to decide. Stick by that decision. Change it if we have to. And get on with the work that needs to be done. Here at Faith Builders, we are faced with decisions that may be financial loss, it may be financial gain. And I'll admit to you, there are times that I put them off just as long as I can. But I know that by and by somebody has got to decide what's going to happen here. Whether we're going to do this or whether we're not going to do this. And what you do is you pray mightily that God would give wisdom, that you consider all the facts, and then you make a decision. And you do it. Okay? You have to have the courage to decide. Sheila and I are going to Poland here in just a few days to look at a mission over there. And I'm frightened. I'm not frightened to fly. I'm not frightened of Poland, but I'm frightened of what for can of worms we're opening and what all this means and how much energy this is going to call for. But we've already decided and we're not turning back on it. Okay, you got to have the ability to decide. Six, wisdom to delegate. I have a problem here. I'll just tell you that. I'm trying to learn this, but my tendency is just, well, if it needs done, just go do it. Don't ask somebody else to do it. But the leader has got to learn to be able to look at the people, at his co-workers, recognize their strengths, their weaknesses, and when a job needs to be done, to say, you, the one who should do this, you, do this. He can pull them right out and he can delegate responsibility and then let them do it. I'll not be there bothering them and trying to tell them, looking over the shoulder, say, do this, do that. No, let them do it. The ability to delegate. I'm really poor at this, and I know it. Seventh, a hospitable attitude. Now, I chose the word hospitable. You see hospital in there, right? A person who is a healer, a person who will go way out of his way for the tender, loving care of the people under his charge. Now, I know I'm enlarging the definition of that word a bit when I use the word hospitable, but the person needs to have these characteristics. And lastly, on the list that I have here, is a holy humility. Everybody knows that Moses was the meekest man on the face of the earth. Humility and leadership go together. They sure do. First one to confess that I need a good dosage of this. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, and he will exalt you in due season. In his own good time, in his own good way, perhaps to a position of leadership. But humility is first. I have seldom seen a person who wanted a job desperately and got it and did very well at it. I have seen a lot of people who really didn't want to do it. They had the qualifications. They kind of got forced into it and they do well. And I think maybe the difference has something to do with humility. I don't know. But it seems to be the case. I would just caution in general, if you find a person who desperately wants a job, you better hunt somewhere else, I suspect. What do you have to add to this list? I know there are many, many characteristics that we could bump in here. What do you think? Okay, I have 20 minutes. I have one other sheet that I would like to put here on the overhead. This is just a stab. It's an effort. How you would actually go about doing this. Oh, I wanted to cover that. All right, so how are you going to do this? If you're a school board chairman, or you're a principal looking for teachers, or even if you're involved in leadership development in some way. Well, first and foremost, be an example. This is probably the best way to develop leadership. If you have been around a person who is an outstanding leader, you tend to pick up some of their characteristics and you learn some of their methods. So, first and foremost, be an example. Secondly,
Now, this is very practical. Define the leadership role that is needed. All right, so there's a need in your community. Maybe it's for a pastor. Maybe it's for a principal. Maybe it's for a first and second grade teacher. Give it definition. Define it as precisely as you can. What the job is, what the qualities are that are required for to get the job accomplished. Just get it on paper, somehow get it down. Define leadership role that is needed. Third, evaluate native skills, or you might say evaluate the skills that God has given a person. Now, I want to be clear on this. You can't suck blood out of a turnip. Okay, and I'm the first one to say that you very often we cannot see well enough to see the characteristics that a person may have and the skills they may have, but there are many times we can. There's no point in asking a person to do something who is not equipped to do it, who does not have a certain native skill for it. You can just start with public speaking. I think it extraordinarily strange when people will name a person to the lot who is very, very uncomfortable in front of people. I wonder about that. Now, don't misunderstand me. A lot of skill can be developed, but I'm just saying, why ask a person to do something who really was never equipped to do it to begin with? And I don't have a lot of direction as to how you find these native skills, but I think if we're observant enough, we can see them. Fourth, evaluate the ability of the candidate to learn new skills. This is perhaps the most important of all. You're looking for a first and second grade teacher? Do they show the characteristics? Do they have what it takes to match the description you've given to it? And for what they don't know, do they have the skill to learn it? Fifthly, provide training where necessary. There are seminars. There are people who know a lot more about this subject than I do. And I'm not here lifting them up or saying that it's something great. But it's necessary. We run a personal care home down here. And I'm getting ready to send a supervisor off to a training school just simply because I know it will be good for the exposure to what is required by the state and all of this to run a personal care home. That's what I mean by this, a practical sense. There are these places where you can train folks. Six, create experience opportunities. And here's where the skilled leader's skill is really taxed. There has been a current movement among churches to have a bishop retire at age 65 or 70 or something like that and to be replaced before he dies. I think that's a good idea myself. It's an opportunity for some person in that church to gain the experience that is required to run that office, to be in there, and to be organizing and inspiring the church. Okay? And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about here when I say create experience opportunities. The wise principal knows that he may not be there forever. So he's careful if he has opportunity to be taking somebody under his wing and showing him how it's to be done, and letting him involve himself in this business of managing and inspiring and organizing a school. It gets him to help do the schedule. He might even say to him, here, you do the schedule. Let him wrestle with it for a little while, and then critique it and work together on it. But he does this. He creates experience opportunities for a person to exercise leadership skills. And the last one, retire.
basically meaning if you do a good job of developing leadership, you're just getting yourself out of the job. Let somebody else do it. Prepare them for it. Get out of the way and let them do it. Okay? Really, that's a little facetious, but it's meant to be a point. Okay? It's intended to say that there is a time to step out of the position, to have somebody who's been prepared for it step in. Do you know in public schools, it is a generally accepted policy to replace the superintendent of the district every 7 years at least, if not earlier? Why? They just know from general observation and experience that when you bring in new blood, and you bring in new blood, and you bring in new blood, you keep your program alive. You keep it new. You keep it fresh. You introduce fresh ideas. Rare is the man who, after 40 years of age, whoa, that's me, after 40 years of age, really continues to develop a sharp edge and expand vision sufficiently to carry people with him into new frontiers. Now, I say that with some carefulness, but I think it's true. By now, my basic philosophy and ideology of life has been set. I'm not saying it can't change. I tend to be a person who tries to stay up with what's happening and allow myself to learn what's going on. But it probably is good that if I'm already thinking about preparing somebody to come in and take my place, I can't wait for the day, to come in and take my place so I can just teach school. My first love is to teach school. And I really don't care for administration. But seriously, we need to keep bringing in fresh leadership all the time, and maybe we've got to retire or at least step out of the position for that to happen. 10 minutes for questions and answers. Well, no, this actually goes to 4. I got to let you out early. You know the first rule of speech making? Stand up, speak up, and shut up. So, you know, when we're done here, we quit. Your questions. Yes, sir.
We do it naturally.
Whoa, okay. What do you do? That's a good question. What do you do with a natural leader who is not the leader? Okay. Somebody tell us. This scenario happens over and over again where you have an organization and somebody is in position and somebody comes along who really exhibits a lot of skill and probably could do the job better. Then what do? You tell me. That is a tough one, isn't it? Ben.
I just read a story about a group of violinists. They were up on stage and they were giving their piece, you know, their skills to a big group of people. I don't know where I heard this. You might even want more speakers this week. But anyway, this one person, this one young man, is all the crowd. And they urged him on, and he just, you know, played one piece after another. And a man came up and talked to the director, and he said, "This is a master. You've got a master here." And the master said, "No." The director said, "No, we don't." And this fellow, he couldn't understand it. He said, "It comes too easy for him."
Let's just be a villain. That's interesting. Ben is casting a little bit of a negative slant here on the person who is naturally skilled. He was pointing out the violinist, how do you say that? Violinist? That's not right. Person who plays a violin. Violinist. Okay, I had the accent wrong. I mean, yeah, the wrong place. A violinist who did very, very, very well. And when the director was asked about it, said, well, he'll never be very good because he's naturally too good. So he won't work at it. Okay, good point. That hasn't solved your problem, but it bears on it.
In the area of leadership, God has given ability to the youth. If a person, though, finds the position that he is in very easy to fill, he at least must remember that many others do not necessarily. He must be careful to be sympathetic to those who do not show leadership or any other ability. I think that can apply to a teacher that's very, very smart. I have difficulty in understanding the slow student. It doesn't mean it's wrong to be smart. It means wrong to teach school. They must be conscious that he cannot expect everybody to be like these.
Good. God sets up and takes down whom he will. And the sooner that you surrender yourself to the sovereignty of God on this issue, the better. So if you happen to be in a position where you think that so-and-so could do better than so-and-so, just relax. God has his own way of taking care of that. Kenny, you had it. Yes, I do. Good point. Oh, I'm not ready to argue that. Ed.
Well, it's fascinating me that I think if you check it, from the time David was anointed until he became king was about 15 years. So he was anointed to be king. Mm-hmm. God had rejected Saul. But God has left that whole thing. It was a time. And David didn't try to push into that. So,
that's a terrific example. In fact, I was just standing here thinking that perhaps that naturally gifted leader would enhance his skill about 100 times if he would just learn how to function under the leadership of this other person who does not do as well or does not have as natural of a gift for it. That'd be my guess. I know one thing that doesn't work. It does not work to somehow slice the person who is in leadership to pieces. I just said, well, the Bible doesn't go for it. Okay? Yes?
I'd like to hear some discussion on the, developing leadership in school. First, second,
okay, can we give the brother here some help on how to develop leadership? Are you talking about among the students now?
Maybe it's kind of hard to say, but we heard last night about, maybe yesterday afternoon, about looking at a person's gift and finding what that is. Yep. And building on it.
Yeah.
And some of us, if we had teachers, like you're talking about, would have looked at our gifts and abilities, seeing them as teachers, they would be different from us. Some of us have that opportunity. And I have a girl in school that at times expresses herself that she'd like to be a teacher, and I don't really see it in her. And I had some advice to give her some responsibility and see how she does with it. But if you're talking about vision, you're talking about training. It's a good time to start when they're young. I realize I don't want to take a child without childhood, but maybe more discussion on that.
Hmm. Somebody has something to share on this. So, yes.
I remember one
situation I had last year. Sometimes I tell my students, free time for PE day. Whatever they want. Sometimes the students get kind of frustrated because they don't know what they want to do. They say, well, give us something to do. I said, no. Some of the guys, maybe a couple of guys said, we want to play basketball. I said, we have a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an opportunity for those fifth, fourth, third graders to somebody or two guys. I said, choose two guys to be captain. I said, pick up teams and play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. It took a little bit of a load off me. Because I didn't have to do it for them.
Do you ever assign somebody to be responsible? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking to myself that probably, for example, if you saw a fifth grade boy who was seemed to have some of these skills, you might see, well, what happens? If you put him in charge of fifth and sixth grade basketball game. How will he do? Right. Somebody else have something to share with. Todd.
Can you mark that? Because I had a boy that he was a national leader and he was always a leader. No matter what game he played, he was.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth taking that young man aside and say, you know, I really like your aggressiveness, and this has a lot of potential. But you realize what you're doing. You're taking advantage of this. Okay, so he chooses up teams. He said, okay, we're going to choose up teams. And you know, he gets the thing all going, and he makes her come out his way, right? Okay, good. Somebody else had a hand up back here.
Is great with the student emotions. Junior, senior high, I worked especially well on the other grades, like the blunders, and helping hand out papers.
So, mm-hmm.
We all used the court, through my hearing some more ideas as a freshman.
Mm-hmm. Okay, student devotions was mentioned there, as well as monitors to hand out papers. These are things that put responsibility on people and develop leadership. What else do you have to share along that line?
Something to say that we previous natural leader. I think the example of Moses is a really good example of how he was trained the best way to be the best leader possible and try to be the leader God said wait.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Moses is a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
Only God's time.
The example of Moses is cited here. The patience that was needed between 40 years old and 80 years old until God was really ready to use him as a qualified leader. Good point. Okay. Chris. Mm-hmm. Sure. Have one student help another student. Okay.
Choosing songs and leading in prayer to her ways.
Choosing songs, leading in prayer, did you say? These.
It is leading oral prayer to solve the first prayer.
Good, solid oral prayer. Good. Yes.
Words on how students helping each other. How can you keep a good attitude on the one that's being helped?
All right, the question is how do you, you have a student who's helping another student, and the student who's being helped feels like a fool and wonders what he should, that he just doesn't want to function right. What would you do?
Summers ago,
couldn't go through this direction. And I was really blocked and I didn't get it. She helped me understand a lot what's going on.
Okay. I don't know if there's a pat answer to that. Perhaps the teacher, maybe the best thing you can do is to find a time when a student comes in with a turtle or something, and this student is pretty good with turtles. And you sit down and say, you know, I don't know anything about turtles. Could you tell me something about these? And so if your students see you stooping as low as you got to stoop to learn, okay, so even if it's a little first grader's got something to say, he's got your ear, and you're not going to belittle him, you're going to sit down and listen. And he might do the same. It's just a suggestion. Yes?
I have a question.
Two questions here. Let's take the lady back there first. This is an attitude that is generated by the teacher. Your question, Marshall.
Is there a danger in preparing students for leadership? You know, if you notice an individual has certain qualities that are essential leadership, in our attempt to prepare them to, I guess looking at from past experience myself, maybe that has to come in with discerning personalities and weaknesses in along with the strengths of leadership. But when I was younger, I was extremely arrogant. You know, and
can't believe that.
But you know, God has given me in situations most effectively when it was I realized that I couldn't do it. You know, if there was a situation where I was confident, then there would not be the dependence and the recognition that, you know, God has to work. And I wonder, is there a danger in our preparation of leaders to make them become overconfident or help them to be confident in their abilities where they don't recognize?
That produces this arrogancy. Okay, the question is there a danger in this leadership development thing of producing arrogancy in the person that you maybe think has these characteristics? Oh, I certainly believe so. I would say the least a person knows about his natural skills, the better off he is. And I would say secondly that the wise instructor in that case would put you in a position where you couldn't handle it. If he sensed, here's an arrogant little fifth grader who does have some skills, but really ought to have his wings clipped a little bit. Well, put him in a position where he flounders. He just can't handle it. He can't do it. And then rescue him. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. There you go. Sure. I will guarantee you success in the classroom if you can produce the team atmosphere in your classroom. I'll guarantee it. Good. Yes.
That's something that blessed me last year. I was teaching English to the 10th graders. There was one girl that was recognized as being the best in that class. talk to each other about how you diagram the symptoms and work together on that. That's fine. And that's something I try to stress to my friends. Everybody has something they can do better than somebody else. Everybody wants to work together. I said, everybody can do better than
that's right. Needs to be facilitated, but it'll work. Brendan.
You said something about a natural born leader become under the official leader and encouraging him to make him successful. What are some practical ways how do you work in making a person over you successful?
Mervyn.
Especially.
The question here on the floor is, what do you do, or how, in a practical sense, how does the natural born leader, I hate that term, by the way, but we'll use it, how does he support the person whom he is responsible to? Well, in any leadership seminar, they're going to use the word affirm. And that natural leader needs to learn how to affirm the person who is struggling in his position. And this is not anything really easy. But almost always that person does some things very well. And so what you do, what the natural leader would do is take those things that person does well and just say, you know, I really appreciated the way you did that. That was good. I like that. And let them know, I'm here to serve you. I don't really know what else to say. Okay, that's probably enough said. Certainly appreciate you coming this afternoon and want to encourage you to enter into the task of training the youngsters in your classrooms, being leaders in your schools, doing God's will. Let's stand for word of prayer and you'll be dismissed. Thanks, Father, again for your grace shown to us. Thank you for the many, many fine men that you have brought into my experience in years gone by. The Bishop Amos Martin from many, many years ago who blessed my life. Sunday school teachers and other leaders who just contributed mightily to my experience. And Father, I thank you for those who are my authorities today. And I just want to bring myself in submission first and foremost to you and then to those who have charge over my experience. Pray that you would help all of us to first of all know what it means to follow.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.